Ooh, you want to play psycho killer? Can I be the helpless victim?
Cross your eyes and scream, man. Scream for your life!
Hello, I'm your Scream Queen podcaster, Jenica Olin. This is the first episode I will have ever recorded, so if you're listening to this, you are a day one listener. My objective for this podcast is to delve into the themes of horror, both real and imagined. Each episode will cover one movie in depth based on theme of the month. This month's theme is all about family, and we have some killer families in the horror genre. The slogan I'm using is "A family that slays together stays together," and these families take that to heart. I also have a trivia night once a month at my husband's venue in Orlando, Florida. Conduit is home to music and other events that are not in the mainstream media. Until 2022, Conduit was known as The Haven. We were excited when we got the opportunity to purchase the venue and continue with the legacy of being for punk, metal, alternative, and the local scene. Drug Church was just playing there, which is a really awesome hardcore band. Let's see what other things are coming up. So there is going to be Bridge City Centers is going to be there on the 17th, which is the day before my trivia. They're like a neo-folk, like not your dad's folk. Then we've got Cytotoxin, which is a heavy metal band. I'm looking forward to them. And another show that I was looking forward to is Dance with the Dead, which is a dark synth wave band. So those are just like a few of the things that are coming up at Conduit and that I'm personally looking forward to. All right, now back to trivia talk. The movies I cover each month at my trivia event will also be what I cover on this podcast. So if you plan on attending any of my events, this will be a good place to get a leg up on everyone else. The movies I will be covering are The Hills Have Eyes, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and The Devil's Rejects. When it comes to original versus a remake, I always start with the original. For me, you have to start with the origin story before moving on. I want you to know what's coming up in this episode so that you know what I have to offer and stick around. So each episode is going to have an intro just like this, then a brief synopsis of the movie where I edit some sounds and things and make it a little bit more interesting. My storytelling abilities, or I try. I'm going to have a guest each episode, or at least try to. And that's when I'm going to bring out all my facts and research that I did for this episode. And then we're going to end on the true crime of it all. I'm a huge true crime fan, and I like to make connections between the true horrors that inspire our darkest imaginations. The truth is, the stuff on screen is way tamer than the true horrors that take place every day. In today's episode, I'll be delving into the depravity of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Let's set the scene with a synopsis of the movie. If you're here, you probably already watched the movie and know what happens. The purpose of this segment is to set the mood for what comes next. You could think of this as a bedtime story.
In the early hours of August 18th, 1973, a grave robber steals several corpses from a cemetery near Newt, Texas. The robber ties a rotting corpse and other body parts onto a monument, creating a grisly display that's discovered by a local resident as the sun rises. Driving in a van, five teenagers take a road trip through the area. Sally Hardesty, Jerry, Pam, Kirk, and Franklin, who's physically handicapped. They stop at the cemetery to check on the grave of Sally and Franklin's grandfather, which appears undisturbed. As the group drives past the slaughterhouse, Franklin recounts the Hardesty's family's history with animal slaughter. They soon pick up a hitchhiker who talks about his family who worked at the old slaughterhouse.
Hitchhiker, Should we pick him up?
Oh, yeah, man. Pick him up. He'll asphyxiate out there.
What does he look like?
Well, the son of a bitch is gonna smell just like the slaughterhouse.
Oh, give the guy a break. He can sit by Franklin.
What do you want to do?
Oh, he's weird looking. No!
He borrows Franklin's pocket knife and cuts himself, then takes a Polaroid picture of the group, for which he demands money. When they refuse to pay, he burns the photo and attacks Franklin with a straight razor. The group forces him out of the van, where he smears blood on the side as they drive off. Low on gas, the group stops at a station whose proprietor says that no fuel is available. The group explores a nearby abandoned house owned by the Herdesty family. Kirk and Pam leave the others behind, planning to visit a nearby swimming hole mentioned by Franklin. On their way there, they discover another house surrounded by rundown cars and run by gas-powered generators. Hoping to barter for gas, Kirk enters the house through an unlocked door, while Pam waits outside. As he searches the house, a large man wearing a mask made of skin appears and murders Kirk with a hammer. When Pam enters the house, she stumbles into a room strewn with decaying remains and furniture made from human and animal bones. She attempts to flee, but is caught by Leatherface and impaled on a meat hook. He then starts up a chainsaw, dismembering Kirk as Pam watches. In the evening, Jerry searches for Pam and Kirk. When he enters the other house, he finds Pam's nearly dead, spasming body in a chest freezer and is killed. With darkness falling, Sally and Franklin set out to find their friends. En route, Leatherface ambushes them, killing Franklin with a chainsaw. He chases Sally into the house, where she finds a very old, seemingly dead man and a woman's rotting corpse. She escapes from the man by jumping through a second floor window. And she flees to the gas station. With Leatherface in pursuit, Sally arrives at the gas station when he seems to disappear. The station's proprietor comforts Sally with the offer of help, after which he beats and subdues her, loading her into his pickup truck. The proprietor drives to the other house, and the hitchhiker appears. The proprietor scolds him for his actions at the cemetery, identifying the hitchhiker as the grave robber. As they enter the house, the masked man reappears, dressed in woman's clothing. The proprietor identifies the masked man and the hitchhiker as brothers, and the hitchhiker refers to the masked man as Leatherface. The two brothers bring the old man, Grandpa, down the stairs and cut Sally's fingers so that Grandpa can suck her blood. Sally then faints from the ordeal. The next morning, Sally regains consciousness. The men taunt her and bicker with each other, resolving to kill her with a hammer. They try to include Grandpa in the activity, but Grandpa's too weak. Sally breaks free and runs onto a road in front of the house, pursued by the brothers. An oncoming truck accidentally runs over the hitchhiker, killing him. The truck driver attacks Leatherface with a large wrench, causing him to fall and injure his leg with the chainsaw. Sally, covered in blood, flags down a passing pickup truck and climbs into the bed, narrowly escaping Leatherface. As the pickup drives away, Sally laughs hysterically while an enraged Leatherface swings his chainsaw in the road as the sun rises.
I was going to have a guest today, but I had some technical difficulties with the equipment that I've purchased. So this is part of those like growing pains. So bear with me. Next episode, I will have a guest, but for this episode, I'm going to be solo. So now I'm going to talk about all the observations I've made, the themes that are in the movie. Just like we're going to get into the nitty-gritty of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So there are hundreds of strange details in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. There's weird dialogue, editing of scenes is unusual for the time, strange sounds unsettle the mind, and morbid props set a scene of carnage. On their own, these details can be unsettling, but as the pieces are put together, like a dismembered corpse, they begin to make a lot more sense. The film's subtle concepts begin to emerge one fragment at a time. When talking about horror movies with friends, I'm always interested to hear the details each person picks up on. Aside from the iconic scenes, everyone notices something different about the characters or the setting. Certain things stick out in our brains based on our past experiences and take on a whole new meaning. That's part of the reason why I want to have guests on, so that I can kind of pick that apart. And I always get a different, interesting perspective. But for this episode, it's, you know, as I said, it's just me because of audio stuff. But next time there will be a guest. One thing that stuck out to me that other people may have overlooked is that after they picked up the hitchhiker, Franklin commented, "I think we just picked up Dracula." Hitch talks about his family working in the slaughterhouse, and then Franklin makes another vampire reference, a whole family of Draculas. Not quite as audible unless you turn up the volume. When Kirk sees the old Franklin house, he says that it looks like the birthplace of Bela Lugosi. Bela Lugosi is, of course, famous for playing Dracula in 1931. And in one of the most surreal moments of Chainsaw, Grandpa, who we are led to believe is a corpse because he hardly moves, never opens his eyes, and has rotten-looking flesh. Like, it looks like it's falling off of his body. There's the scene where they cut Sally's finger, and he drinks the blood from her finger. So it, all of these things together, he's very clearly presented as a sort of blood-sucking undead monster. Like, the guy can't talk, he can't move, but he can drink blood, is basically what I got out of that. There are also, like, a lot of little details that just lend to the family being outcast and having something inherently wrong with them. So when Hitch gets into the van, one thing I noticed about this character is his red mark on his face. And it could be a birthmark. It could be some sort of scar from a past injury. It could be a burn, maybe, possibly. So we don't know. They don't explain why he has this mark on his face, but it's just another one of those details that builds on him not being normal. He's abnormal, and to an extent, he has a genetic defect about him. There was also a decent amount of, like, voodoo-esque imagery. The blood smeared by the hitchhiker on the side of the van. The bones hanging like a wind chime at their abandoned family home. And a stack of bones on a blanket at what appeared to be the back entrance of the home. Franklin was the only one that really seemed to take these signs seriously in the movie. He kept saying, like, do you think the hitchhiker is going to come back? Do you think this means something? Everyone kept kind of brushing him off. No one was taking him seriously. They just thought he was being dramatic. But it was just very interesting how Franklin, who has, you know, he's the only one that's a little different, and he's noticing these differences. He's noticing the meaning into overlooked details. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre is so much more in depth than you would think. This film, it just has multiple layers. And on the surface, you know, you're just being disturbed by all of the sounds and the angles and the, you know, the way that things are being filmed. But there's so many things to miss out on. I find nothing is accidental in this film. Everything has a purpose, and it's building on each other. Foreshadowing is definitely happening in this movie. We could talk with Hitch. That's a lot of foreshadowing whenever he burns the picture. but there's also Pam. And Pam, it reads from an astrology book discussing the influence of the planets and how they can predict or control human destiny. So she talks about how Saturn's in retrograde, which is when a planet moves in a direction that's opposite to its regular movement in the zodiac. The film suggests that this disordered alignment of the universe encourages people to embrace the contrary as a survival tactic. So that's super interesting. Pam reads Franklin's horoscope, which predicts that the day could be disturbing and unpredictable due to travel, long-range plans, and upsetting people, which is almost like very on the nose because he upset Hitch. They're going on a long drive. There's going to be unpredictable occurrences, and they're quite disturbing. So that horoscope was, you know, if I believed in horoscopes, that would be the one. And for Sally's horoscope, Pam reads Sally's horoscope, noting that Capricorns are ruled by Saturn. And then we know that Saturn's in retrograde and all these other things. Since Sally is ruled by Saturn and Saturn's in retrograde, I guess that must mean that she's going to embrace the contrary as her survival tactic, which I don't know if she embraces the Sawyer family, but she definitely survives it, and she is a good final girl. I'll say that. She is a good final girl. She jumps out of windows. She does everything she can to survive. So good on her. I'm probably reading too much into the horoscopes at this point, but it was just an interesting piece. So there you have it. Pam mentions astrology in like a playful way, but she doesn't seem to take it seriously herself. There's no concern for entering an abandoned house. Any of the signs Franklin points out are disregarded as him being like dramatic. She literally sees a shitload of abandoned cars. She's thrown a human tooth by Kirk before they even enter the house. And they're going to enter a stranger's house. So she doesn't listen to herself when it comes to the astrology stuff, because it was already saying that shit's going to be like turned around because Saturn's in retrograde. You know that house smelled like rotting decay. And she just goes in there. She falls into a room that's covered in feathers and decorated in bones. For me, she did everything wrong. And I really had no sympathy for her when she was put on the meat hook. Like, that was such an iconic scene. And she's definitely the kind of character that gets put on a meat hook. So, sorry, Pam. So let's go back to Hitch really quick. The hitchhiker and Leatherface are operating at a mental deficit, for sure. I think that's pretty clear when Leatherface doesn't speak. And then we've got Hitch, who has all these mannerisms and things that are unusual. He doesn't know how to really socialize. He's a sadomasochist, obviously, from the scene where he cuts his own hand. So Leatherface obviously has identity issues as well. There's no mother figure in the house, and he's like, he's the feminine energy in the home, which honestly makes sense because he's the only one in the house all day making sure that there's food to eat. I honestly find them to be sympathetic characters because they are obviously abused. It isn't outwardly said that the man working at the gas station, that that's their father, but it's kind of suggested that he is. They leave that very ambiguous, the way that he comes in and scolds them. It's very much like the father figure coming in and reprimanding children, because especially Leatherface, he could take him on in 2 seconds. He could chop him up and serve him for dinner, but he doesn't. He actually, like, he cowers when he's being scolded by this man. So to me, that seems like they are being abused by this man, and they've been abused by him since they were small children. So one major hidden theme in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is animal cruelty. One of the more subtle examples is that Sally talks about animals on the wallpaper in her old house, which we can also see in the shot. She describes that these animals used to talk to her, used to talk her to sleep. That's a strange piece of dialogue to include. There are other much more conclusive examples. The metaphor is generally overlooked in that the crazy family of psychos having a history of working in the meat industry is on surface appearances simply a plot device that lends plausibility to the activity of killing people. So like, they've been desensitized and to killing so much that now they can just kill people and it's not going to matter. So when we see humans whacked in the head with a lump hammer like pigs, or hung on hooks like livestock by a guy wearing a butcher's apron, we generally just perceive it as incidental to the story, even though in the early scenes, Franklin talks in detail about the horrors of the slaughterhouse. As Sally is being prepared for lump hammer slaughter, the family talks about Grandpa's glory days as a livestock killer. If you pay attention, you'll find subtleties in the film that communicate a sort of reversal theme in which human characters are slaughtered for meat like farm animals, with the express intention of making audiences aware of the suffering that animals go through in order to provide those tasty meats that so many of us enjoy eating on a daily basis. You might notice the camera slowly zooms in to Franklin's face for his dialogue about the slaughterhouse when they're in the van. These kinds of slow zooms are generally used when characters are speaking dialogue that is of utmost importance to the narrative. So that is, you know, that's signaling a slaughterhouse talk. This means something. During the driving scene in the van, when Franklin and Hitch are talking about the process of slaughtering animals and making head cheese, I personally felt disgusted by the mental images being created through this dialogue. I started thinking about how I used to be a vegetarian and how it would be a good thing to go back to. When Hitch talks about how animals are killed and processed, the girls ask for him to change the subject. And one even objects that she likes meat and thus doesn't want her enjoyment spoiled. They don't want to be made aware of the suffering that contributes to their own eating habits. And this is what's clever about Texas Chainsaw Massacre as an animal rights film. You can tell a person about the horrors of the slaughterhouse and invite them to go watch videos of how animals are treated to facilitate the luxury of eating flesh. But many people will try to change the topic, block the information out of their minds, and will specifically avoid watching footage of the reality they don't want to see. Texas Chainsaw gets around this dilemma by not overtly presenting itself as an animal rights movie. But those who are really paying attention will notice that the squeals of pigs are dubbed over the close-up shots of Sally's eyes as she cries at the dinner table, even though there are no pigs in the room. Regarding the Psycho family themselves, their collective depravity and insanity does appear somewhat ridiculous and over the top. But in a way, the family seems to present all the worst things that can go wrong in a family. There's clearly a lifetime's worth of physical and verbal abuse that's been perpetrated by the older guy against Leatherface and Hitch. Hitch is also told he should never leave Leatherface on his own, as if Leatherface has the mind of a young child. His inability to speak suggests severe educational neglect, and Hitch just acts like a rebellious and hyperactive kid or teenager who is also used to taking a beating, but is now partially immune to it and has become a self-harmer. Hitch's masochism is also an important psychological device, because any man who's willing to cut himself with a knife and enjoy it isn't likely to show much empathy for a live victim who he decides to carve up. He also has a plaster on his finger. Was that also the result of self-harm? His burning of the group's picture is pretty creepy. Obviously, a metaphor of his desire to make Franklin suffer and die, or burn in hell, so to speak. His use of flash photography in photographing Franklin also might be a deliberate clue regarding the film's opening flash photography of exhumed bodies, accompanied by the sound of a digging shovel. We learn later that Hitch is the one who has been creeping about digging up corpses and creating these like grisly displays with the bones. So what else? Well, we're given a generalized sense of violence by the multiple instances of radio broadcasts in which newsreaders talk about assorted violent crimes. Apart from in the opening shot of the cemetery, most of these news stories are deceptively passed off as background noise and are usually only faintly audible. So their effect on the audience is subconscious. There are stories about burning oil, refinery, suicides, a breakout of the cholera disease, a building collapse that kills 29 people, in which the report says there was no reason for the collapse and that sabotage is suspected. There's a story about a couple who have been stabbed and killed, their features carved away, and a man's genitals removed. Possibly Hitch and his family did this. And there's a story of a couple arrested who chained up their 18-month-old daughter in the attic. As well as conjuring up a general sense of violence, some of these stories may have been included to make the audience anticipate similar fates to the characters. For instance, the story of the confined child is heard as the old guy is preparing to abduct Sally. The choice of chainsaw as murder weapon is clever because of its intimidating sound. The general absence of music in the chainsaw sequences is also a wise choice because the chainsaw effectively is the music. And sometimes it even comes off as a stand-in for the victim's screams, which are drowned out and lost in the buzz. All these little psychological tricks, when incorporated together into the full movie, stack up in the viewer's mind to create a very strong overall feeling of violence, sadism, and depravity that is far more intense than what the film actually shows. There are plenty more examples that I haven't talked about, so I invite you to watch the film for yourself and consciously try to pick up on those details. So some insider facts and information that I was able to dig up on the movie is the Black Lorry driver character at the end of the movie was named Ed Gein, G-U-I-N-N, Guinn, which sounds very similar to the serial killer Ed Guinn, G-E-I-N, Guinn, whose cannibalistic activities particularly inspired the film. Coincidence? This similarity is very interesting, but there's no proof that he was hired just because of his name. There's also that dead armadillo at the beginning of the film. Although the filmmakers cite in the commentary that the dead armadillo seen at the beginning of the film was something they just spotted in the road and decided to film, a dead armadillo was also seen on the dinner table at the end of the movie. That's not an accident. Then there's the rating for the movie and the lack of gore. So the lack of gore in the movie was actually an attempt at getting a PG rating. That is so of the times that they thought they could get a PG rating for this movie. The intended effect of making the film less gruesome did not work. By using psychological devices to terrorize the audience, the film had the opposite effect, making people imagine the dismemberment of bodies and linger on those details. Instead, the movie was rated X originally, giving it a porn rating, even though it has no nudity in the film. Now, let's get into the true crime of it all. The original 1974 film was written and directed by Toby Hooper with his co-writer Kim Henkel. Cannibalism, grave robbing, and the creation of masks, clothing, and furniture out of human and animal parts were inspired by the real-life case of the killer Ed Guinn. Ed Guinn was arrested in the 1950s after killing Mary Hogan, a 51-year-old divorcee and the owner of a local tavern in Pine Grove. On the afternoon of December 8, 1954, he shot her in the head with his .32-caliber revolver. Actually, it wasn't his. He was using it at the store, and she turned around while he was looking at it, but he had, it was premeditated because he already had the bullets in his pocket to put in the gun and then shoot her. So after that, he put her body in his pickup truck and took her back to his shed. Both brothers of the Sawyer family have characteristics of Ed Guinn. Hitch personifies the grave digging and possible necrophiliac side of Ed Guinn. Guinn himself would never admit to necrophilia, but there is evidence to the contrary. He says that the body smelled and that's why he didn't have sex with them, but he would check the newspaper often for freshly dug graves. This leads people to believe that the smell excuse isn't as convincing as Guinn would have liked us to believe. He had a lot of shame around the things that he did, and he didn't admit to many of the acts that later would be proven with evidence. While Leatherface showcases the simple-minded skin-mounting side, cannibalism is seen in both characters. Although Guinn also denied eating any of the remains he brought home, there was evidence to the contrary in his kitchen that gives head cheese a whole new meaning. Gross. Cannibalism has been common in many parts of the world and was practiced by serial killers such as Jeffrey Dahmer and Andre Ciccatello. The details of Guinn's activities cover a lot of what is shown in Texas Chainsaw. With the exception of Sam's meat hook death and a few other sadistic acts, Guinn wasn't a sadist. He was primarily interested in dead bodies. He also didn't run around with a chainsaw. Guinn was also a lone killer, but in Texas Chainsaw, there's a whole family of Guinn types. So we could surmise that the idea of a family of Guinn types is impossible, right? Well, unfortunately, documented history proves otherwise. There have been plenty of examples of serial killer teams. One such example is the Snowtown murders in Australia, which were committed by John Bunting and his gang of sadist followers. Throughout the 1990s, Bunting psychologically manipulated a group of people into helping him murder people on the assumption that the victims were pedophiles or equivalent degenerates and thus deserved to be punished in the most brutal manner possible. They would target a victim, usually based on hearsay evidence that they were pedophiles, abduct them, chain them down in a bathtub, then commit all manners of sadistic atrocities before killing them. What is really scary about the Snowtown murders is that Bunting's accomplices would have been extremely unlikely to commit murder without his ideological influence. And a lot of the people in the community knew that murders and torture were going on, and nobody reported it to the police. Given that example, I'd say the family of murderers scenario shown in Texas Chainsaw is quite possible. People viewing the Texas Chainsaw Massacre for the first time find it to be disturbing. I believe this is linked to the awareness of the darkest depths of the human condition. It was common to believe that the movie was based on real events. Like the Sawyer family really lived in Texas and a man with a chainsaw was cutting up teenagers to serve for dinner. Thankfully, there's no such real footage that I can or would try to find. So that's it for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Thank you for listening. I do have some final notes. If you would like to collaborate on something, I would love the opportunity to connect with more people in the horror scene. You can reach out to me through like Facebook or Instagram. I have Scream Queen Trivia as a Facebook page, and I also have it as a Instagram page. So you can contact me on either of those. I'm also thinking about making mini episodes where people write reviews of horror movies they've watched recently. These could be new or old movies. It just is up to you if you want to write something like that in. I would like to shout out some great quality podcasts that have influenced me in my attempt at podcasting. Some of the most influential podcasts have been The Last Podcast on the Left, Red Handed, and My Favorite Murder. If you liked what you heard, please rate, review, and subscribe to my channel. I hope to have an episode out each week, but I'm also learning all of this as I go. I'm sure a year from now, I will listen to this episode and be embarrassed by all the mistakes I made. Thank you for listening, and don't enter people's houses. Even if they aren't a family of cannibals, that's a good way to die by a gunshot, especially if you live here in Florida. Until next time, goodbye.